Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at wbez.org/events.
Welcome. You're listening to Nerdette Recaps Game of Thrones with Peter Segal. I am Greta Johnson.
And I'm Trisha Bobita. And before we begin our recap of Season 7, Episode 2 of Game of Thrones, there's a young gentleman here who apparently has something to say.
Do we have a horn? Can I blow up? Perfect. Ahem. Hear ye, hear ye. I am Miles Dornbos, Squire of Peter, House Segal, sent to deliver some most inauspicious news. The Elder Peter, I can't do this bit anymore, guys. Even though Peter and I do have kind of a Brienne and Pod situation, except that Peter is way balder and I'm way less good at sex. I am his sloppily arranged replacement for this week.
Oh, yeah, we couldn't get Tom Hanks to sub for Peter, so we're going with Miles.
But I know.
Miles, you know Peter well.
I do, perhaps too well, some might say. But I have promised as his temporary squire to not besmirch his name unless you ask really politely. Then I will do it all over the place, and I'll tell you about all the times he's farted in the office.
I mean, I gotta say, part of our criteria was, like, Miles is great because not only does he work with Peter at Wait, Don't Tell Me as a producer, but also he'd probably be good at Peter Segal shit talk. So
it's
welcome.
True. It's the one thing I'm good at. It's the only reason I've been able to keep a job for this long.
Well, and to be clear, also, you do watch Game of Thrones.
I do
so
watch Game of Thrones.
So that's helpful in this specific context.
I have a book
well.
Full of notes here that has just names written down.
Uh-huh. Welcome to recaps.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, before we get to the recap, we actually do have a pretty interesting voicemail that I think we should take a listen to.
Hi guys, longtime fan, first time caller. It's Peter. I am in California at an annual gathering I go to in a beautiful place far in the woods where there not only is no cable TV, there's no internet, there's not even cell phone service. So I'm taking a wonderful break from all electronics. I'm under the trees and I am totally fine with missing this week's episode of Game of Thrones, not even thinking about it. Instead, I have in fact sent my friend and producer Miles Dornbos to help you guys out. He's funny, he's charming, you might know him as the voice of the Wait Twitter feed. He's even wiser than I am about the ways of pop culture. He's sort of, if I'm Stannis, i.e. the worst, he's Tyrion, although a vegetarian version. Anyway, I'm having a wonderful time. I hope you guys are enjoying yourself talking about a TV show. I'm enjoying nature, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
I gotta say, it's really hard to picture Peter enjoying nature. Anybody else? No?
If he's on a bicycle or running
That's
through
true.
It.
Those are the two
but
ways.
But sitting still in it. I don't
can't
know.
Can't do it otherwise. I'd also like to point out that Peter and I have been working together for about 5 years, and he still can't pronounce
yeah,
my last name.
I was wondering about that, but you know he says Cersei also.
He
so
does.
You're just
That's
in
true.
The canon of all of the weird mispronunciations
it
in Peter's life.
Works out great
life.
For me. He also says popcorn instead of popcorn.
Does he really?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, no.
It doesn't make any sense.
Next time, bring some popcorn in here, and you guys will have a great time.
All right, so we are here to rehash Season 7, Episode 2 of Game of Thrones.
It was called Stormborn.
And all the things happened. Oh, my gosh.
And it starts
crazy episode.
Dark and stormy night.
Dragonstone, Dragonstone, Dragonstone.
Oh, a place so
the
nice they
one.
Named it thrice. Wow.
So, yeah, did Dragonstone feel to you guys like Wet Dorne 2.0?
Yeah, I've never seen it quite so stormy.
Yeah. Also, I understand that maybe we're keeping our focus very, very narrow. Shouldn't there be people in Dragonstone? It feels like it's just the six of them and that is it.
And they're always like so artfully arranged in the room.
Exactly.
It felt very stilted.
They plan it out beforehand. Like they have a stage director come in and is like, here's your tableau.
Be
just
in
stand
corners,
in it and do not move.
Look at each other. Don't say anything.
Yeah, it's very confusing that there's not any servants having lights on in any other windows. There's no, I mean, like, where are the rest of the Unsullied? Are they still standing on the ships? Are they still the only ones who came ashore? That seems rude.
I don't know. We haven't seen the dragons at all either, have we?
Well, we saw them sort of swooping
That's true,
the Dragonstone Castle
okay.
at the end of last episode.
But
they
we
seemed
haven't
into it.
Seen a single Dothraki yet. which feels not quite right.
Yeah, I feel like they're very
seasick.
Seeing as there was
a ship full of them. Yeah, exactly. They're still just vomiting throughout Dragonstone. Yeah. That's just what's happening.
Yep. Once you guys get your shit together, you can come ashore, but we don't have any of that special medicine for people who are seasick. Because, right, they call it the poison water. The Dothraki have never been to Westeros, as Cersei will discuss later.
Yes.
But, yeah, so they've never been to Dragonstone, they've never been to Westeros because they think of the sea as poison water. So I'm sure they had a grand time.
I can think of some other people who might now think of the sea as poison water, which again, we'll probably get to a little later.
Very good point.
So this was, I do think, pretty fun to see. Now she's got sort of the head of each of her allied houses. So we have Ilaria Sand. We have Lady Olenna from the House Tyrell.
So good to see her again.
We have, oh man, yeah. Anytime she's in the room, I'm just like, yes, there will be wisdom.
Yes.
And there was. She did her little like side moment with Dany before they left the room, which I really enjoyed, where she was like, I've known a lot of clever men in my life, and I've outlived them all by ignoring them.
She also got the great, like, all men are sheep, you are a dragon. Like, that kind of is it. That's a great, great moment. But I think that Dany might also be a sheep, too. I've got a feeling that things may not work out particularly well. I'm a little bit nervous.
I do like that she seems to be accepting advice, which I haven't seen her really do at all from anyone ever before, except a little bit from Tyrion. So the fact that Lady Olenna literally says, will you take some advice from an old woman? And Emilia Clarke just kind of nods.
Go on. Well, and I think I loved the Varys section that happened in there too, right? Because this is something we've talked about before, like wondering what actually Varys' angles are. And in some ways, he almost seems like one of the purest characters on the show because, you know, as we've talked about, he's not out for the throne. Like, he really does just seem to be standing up for the people. And this particular speech he gives really does indicate exactly that.
I wasn't born into a great house. I came from nothing. I was sold as a slave and carved up as an offering. When I was a child, I lived in alleys, gutters, abandoned houses. You wish to know where my true loyalties lie? Not with any king or queen, but with the people. The people who suffer under despots and prosper under just rule. The people whose hearts you aim to win. If you demand blind allegiance, I respect your wishes. Grey Worm can behead me, or your dragons can devour me. But if you let me live, I will serve you well. I will dedicate myself to seeing you on the Iron Throne because I choose you. Because I know the people have no better chance than you.
Swear this to me, Varys. If you ever think I'm failing the people, you won't conspire behind my back. You'll look me in the eye as you have done today, and you'll tell me how I'm failing them.
I swear it, my queen.
That felt like really mature leadership from Dany.
Yeah.
That I don't think we've seen much of. For her to respond to that brazen a statement. I also just love Varys saying, I choose you.
It was weirdly romantic almost.
It did feel about as close as Varys can get to romance. It also is part one of this week's episode, which I've declared a great week for eunuchs. I think that this might be, of all of the Game of Thrones episodes, the best so far for eunuchs.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And it served before that whole speech, which I really love. And I think that the actor whose name I can't remember sells so just so beautifully. Before that was like the world's most succinct Game of Thrones recap. Like, it covered all six seasons.
She was
like, you supported my brother. And he's like, I totally did. And she was like, then you did this. And he was like, yep, I did. And she was like, and this too. And he was like, uh-huh. And she was like, then Gendry was on the water. It's like, how does she know who Gendry is?
Yep, it was a good recap. It also, I think, help establish, in the same way that the scene with the Hound last week did and the scene with the Lannister soldiers did last week, this idea that, oh yeah, we forget as we're watching this show that we believe in democracy because we're like, which person do we want to be on the throne? And then I go, oh wait, I don't want a monarchy. That seems like bad government.
Maybe we should have a vote.
Oh wait. But then you realize that there are people like Varys and, well, maybe we used to think Littlefinger had some thoughts for others or was thinking about the realm. But really, no, just Varys.
Yep.
Tyrion.
Maybe Tyrion.
Tyrion, yeah. Potentially.
Maybe Jon.
maybe
is interested in the good of the realm. He seems a reluctant king, at
sure.
least.
Oh, he admits
and he lets
much.
The wildlings yeah. in. So I feel like he's a little more of a humanist than a
right.
monarchist.
We're really just getting started with the whole democratization movement of Westeros uh-huh. so far. So uh-huh. that's we're just at the baby steps of it.
Yeah, but Varys from the beginning has been quietly trying to have peace in the realm.
Which is so bizarre because if you – so I went back and watched the whole of Game of Thrones before the season 7 premiere.
Oh, good.
And I, yeah, that's the kind of life that I live, a lonely one. And I forget that within the first couple of episodes, Varys and Littlefinger are pitched as the bad guys. They are pitched as like the power behind the throne and the ones who are conspiring towards evil. And because Ned is kind of your entrance into the world at the very beginning of the show, and they are essentially kind of there to screw him over, you're like, these are the people I need to pay attention to
because
they're
going
to be
bad.
Exactly, the sneaky sneaks.
Yeah.
And then now to have a moment from Varys where I'm like, oh, you're the hero of the show? I didn't realize that that had happened subtly over the course of 7 years. But I really, I kind of love him.
Yeah, that's a great transition to note. I completely forgot about that.
Since the three of us are experts in military history, shall we dissect the battle plan?
Oh my, wow.
Please, let's. You have dragons. Those are things that you have three of.
Right.
Maybe utilizing them a little bit. I understand not wanting to cause unnecessary deaths, not wanting to be a queen of ash, which is
right,
a great
right.
turn of phrase.
Yes.
But at the very least, if you are going to send armies in three different directions, use one dragon to cover each army. Maybe just a good
air
idea.
Cover.
Yeah,
that
just
sounds
a little
like
bit
real
of air
military
cover.
Theory.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
you've
I said, I am an expert.
Got the ground troops and the air force.
And you've got some boats. Yeah, you've got everything covered. You've got land, sea, and air. You've got hamburgers, filet of fishes, and a chicken sandwich. You're set.
I do think that it's interesting that they're basically creating reasons not to use the dragons because the dragons make things too easy.
Right.
Potentially. And also probably cost too much money for the CGI budget. Like, it's a mixture of the two.
That also came up when it comes to the wolves, which we'll get to later. But yeah, the dragons, I think, are also not as focused a weapon as Dany would like to use. So maybe she can send them out and tell them burn, but I don't know if they can drone strike Cersei and King's Landing as opposed to just everyone who lives in King's Landing seems to be the problem.
Right. Sure. We don't have any indication that she can like specifically tell them what to do and they'll do it.
Because shouldn't she be able to just say like, this is Cersei's window.
Right.
Just blow fire into that room.
Yes.
And see.
But no. Yeah.
Okay. No, she's not there yet. That said, they do talk a lot about how they don't want a massacre. Again, she wants to be the queen of the entire country, not just the Queen of Ash. Having seen what we've seen of the citizens of King's Landing, though, sorry,
Queens
jumping
Landing.
Ahead of myself
nice.
A little bit.
Nice.
Those people maybe don't deserve to be saved. I feel like the most prominent citizen in King's Landing that is not a major character is the guy that flashed Cersei that one time.
Oh, yeah,
and it's like, if
great.
Those are the folk, maybe it's okay to dragon them up a little bit.
Dragging them up. Dragging them up.
Also worth noting, Melisandre showing up.
Oh, that's right.
Does make you wonder about the passage of time once again in Westeros. Like, how did she get there?
It's been a while. They got all the way across the sea in
I
the
suppose.
Same amount of time that she rode a horse.
We do say that it's been a while, but I've been judging the passage of time strictly by Cersei's hair growth, and it really doesn't seem like it's been that long,
because
she's
case,
been rocking that same kind of John
great.
And Kate plus eight style for a while now.
And then before we leave Dragonstone, there's another good day for a eunuch happening in Dragonstone.
Finally. And this is, again, another beautiful scene, but also I watched this with my girlfriend Kim, and we were both finally like, oh, we're going to be able to, Game of Thrones is going to show this. This is going to be a thing that happens.
We're going to see the Ken doll?
We're going to see the Ken doll.
Yeah.
And the one thing that this show is unwilling to actually show is eunuch swimsuit area.
We did see eunuch butt, but
we
no
did.
Front swimsuit area.
Let me tell you, this scene, two great butts.
Really great butts.
Both
and
of those great
nice
butts.
Nice breasts
yes,
as well.
Absolutely.
Let's be honest.
So the tally now for this season is
yes.
two butts,
yep.
one boobs.
Two butt, one boobs.
One set of boobs.
Set of boobs.
Let me put that into my over-under sheet here.
Oh, yeah,
two
I definitely
butts, one
wrote
boob.
That down.
I'm also curious, and I don't know much about the life of a eunuch, but he has been an unsullied his entire life.
Yes.
And I'm not sure what the sexual education is like for the Unsullied, but how did he know what to do in that situation? I'm not saying that.
I'm not entirely sure
if I want to go into my own torrid sexual history. But for my first sexual experience, I don't think that I would have had any idea what to do. And he was like, I got this. I'm Grey Worm. See ya.
I mean,
I like the way you just moved away from the microphone and headed south. Right.
I would guess that maybe if you felt like there was something you needed to compensate for,
that would be the way.
You might learn as much as you could about other ways of...
But he's never felt this before. He's never even been remotely interested.
Okay.
That said, we're going to head to King's Landing soon where somebody was proclaimed Warden of the South. But for this episode, I think Grey Worm officially Warden of the South.
I respect that. Can we go back to part of the battle plan for just a second?
Sure.
So Tyrion said that the Unsullied need to take Casterly Rock because while the Lannisters are mostly in King's Landing, they are the ones who hold the power. And if you really want to get to the Lannisters, you have to get Casterly Rock. But who actually is at Casterly Rock?
Isn't K'Vaan still there? Uncle K'Vaan?
Oh, Kevin.
Yeah. Great leader, Uncle K'Vaan? Kevin.
Okay, fine.
That's exactly how I felt.
Guys?
I was like, isn't it empty over there?
Yeah.
Also, K'Vaan might be dead and I may have forgotten that he's dead.
It's a complete
But that's where I think the Lannister army is still centered because when we see the next time on, there's a lot of marching in red with lions, and you know they apparently still have a lot of their standing army there as opposed to living in the capital.
Thank you for clarifying.
There's just no one that we know by name there other than potentially Kevin
Uncle
K'Vaan.
Kevin yes. K'Vaan K'Vaan
K'Vaan.
Okay, moving to town. Is that where we head next?
Moving now to Winterfell.
Yes.
Winterfell.
I said this earlier, but the thing I was most excited about to be here was to hear these live, and I'm so glad. And for when I say live, I need people to know that literally these are performed live. We have a full band in here. It's really amazing.
Yeah, we wanted to go live with the orchestra and the Foley artists and the voice actors this week because people didn't seem to understand just how much work we'd put into the ones from last week. Mm-hmm. So
this
we had to take it up yet another notch.
We can't have direwolves on the show because we've spent all the money on...
It's also a problem for us. Exactly. So we don't spend a lot of time in Winterfell, but we have Tyrion saying to Dany...
He sent the raven.
...that there's a raven being sent. And it's good to remember... Miles, you'll remember if you rewatched the beginning of the show, season one, because I rewatched some of season one, too, that Tyrion and Jon do have a really lovely first couple of interactions and do have a bond.
Oh, because they're
bastards.
Course,
yes.
Yeah, well, all... Well, they're not both bastards, but...
They're both unloved children.
All dwarves are bastards in their father's eyes. What does that mean?
It's something he said to me the first night we met. You know him better than any of us. What do you think?
Tyrion's not like the other Lannisters. He was always kind to me, but it's too great a risk. The Seven Kingdoms will bleed as long as Cersei sits on the Iron Throne. Join us. Together we can end her tyranny.
Sounds like a charmer. Of course, the casual mention of a Dothraki horde, a legion of Unsullied and three dragons, a bit less charming.
I picked that clip in part because it very succinctly shows this is how a family should govern, quietly, just the three of them, not in the room with everyone stomping their ale and murmuring in agreement or disagreement. Oh. Sansa, this is when you disagree with your brother, is quietly. And I also just like Davos getting to say anything always.
What's so great about Davos? Why do we love him so much? Is it the accent?
It's a big part of it is the accent, but also because he is, he's one of the few characters in the show who is like a humble person. Mm. He's a person who maybe doesn't desire as much as everyone else, and all he wants to do is love people. And also, for me, and this is a weakness that is hyper-specific to me, anyone who suffers from adult illiteracy really holds a super special place in my heart. And watching every time I feel like a proud father watching Davos read, which he does every once in a while, and I'm like, you did it. I'm so proud of you.
He did a great job this episode with that letter from Tyrion, too.
Yeah, and let's not forget, moment of silence for the person who taught him to read, Shireen,
who is
going to come up later in this episode.
I was about to say, I think we're going to get some Shireen both in this episode and the next. And I also want to say, Do you guys think that whenever Tyrion writes the word tyranny, he accidentally writes his name first and then has to scratch it out?
You think his name autocorrects by hand?
I think by hand. I just think that you get so used. There are very few words that start in that same fashion. And I think that he starts writing it and he's like, oh, damn it, that's my name. And he has to scratch it out and then start again. You also have to consider that most of the time he's drunk, which doesn't really help.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
I also... You said this is how a family governs, which makes me feel good because it makes me feel like Davos is an adopted brother into the whole group, which I think is just really sweet and
Davos
something that he
Stark.
Deserves.
So instead of that being it, that really could have been the whole time we spent in Winterfell.
But we got a scene also with a bunch of harming men and one little girl who just loves to stand up.
She stands up when she makes a point, which is an Ainsley Hayes reference from West Wing that I will make now, which is when Ainsley Hayes first meets Leo McGarry and she stands up. He says, are you leaving? And she says, no, I'm standing, because that's how one. Let me get the quote right. That's how one voices opposition in a civilized world.
I just
pulled that out of my head, by the way.
That's interesting, because Winterfell is pretty civilized considering
it's getting
the rest
there
of Westeros.
Slowly but surely. I have to say that I know that everyone, I think, is probably getting to a point where having Little Mormont get up and say something is grating on them a bit.
Yeah, Peter had said no more after last week, so he would be very displeased.
The thing is, he said no more of her standing up and defying the crew in support of Jon Snow.
And this time it was the opposite.
Yeah, that's true.
This time she defied Jon Snow. So I was kind of like, okay, pass Little Mormont this time.
She has a very specific speech pattern when she gets up to say things. And there has been talk, I think, of potentially spinning her off into her own show.
Yes, ma'am.
90 shows that they're going to do within this universe. And I would love to see her, because I think the one thing that we don't really get is the ability to see her just as a kid.
Mm.
And I would love to see her using that voice to just ask for like typical kid things.
Like a peanut butter and jelly.
For generations, the Mormont family has eaten peanut butter and jelly sandwiches without the crust on. And that's all I ask today.
I like that you're
so adorable.
Lady Mormont sounds a lot like Dobby
that's
the house
really
elf.
Good. Oh, Dobby. Listen, though, before we get too far from the West Wing, this is very unrelated but also important. I ended up watching some of Ballers after Game of Thrones for some reason.
You just didn't turn off your TV?
Yes, and Richard Schiff is in Ballers now. And it just really blew my mind. So I just wanted, Trisha, to make sure that you knew that.
They do
it seemed important.
Ballers the West Wing of sports marketing shows. That is.
There you go. My favorite was just seeing smirking Baelish in that scene.
Oh.
He did such a good job smirking over there.
I also love that no one offers him a seat. He just always has the same corner of the wall to lean on and smirk. And
it's that civil opposition.
It's also nice. So we also get a scene after we leave the council. We finally get a scene somewhere else in Winterfell.
That's
which
a good
is
point.
In the crypts.
Yeah.
And John and Littlefinger have a scene together where Littlefinger essentially is like, I got boners for every female member of your family.
Ooh.
It's so creepy.
It is so creepy. And it's so creepy that when John gets furious and chokes him out, you're kind of like, Littlefinger probably likes this a little too much.
Oh, no.
Like, you can see Littlefinger kind of smirking a little bit there, too. And he's like,
really thought that was going to be the moment when Littlefinger was going to tell John who his parents are.
Yes.
Because he knows. And I think they were actually teasing us, the audience, with that. Because Littlefinger almost told Sansa seasons ago in the crypt.
Right.
When they were at her Aunt Lyanna's tomb.
Right.
And now they're in front of Ned's tomb. And he could have said, by the way, that's not your dad. But he told, at some point he's going to have to figure that out. Maybe Bran's going to be the one to tell him eventually, and they're waiting for that moment. Because also, Jon probably wouldn't believe Littlefinger. I guess there's that, too.
That's a good point. I certainly wouldn't.
I wouldn't either.
Him.
They are also, I think, pitching a potential aunt-nephew romance between Jon and Dany.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that maybe they want us to get to this new form of incest first before they reveal it to the characters. I think they want to, it's an incest tease. Because the show really has dealt with so many various forms of incest, and finally we get one that hasn't been put together yet.
Yeah, so John can go to Dragonstone and think about marrying Dany for power.
Yes.
Perhaps for love.
Perhaps
but
romance.
Definitely for power. Because he won't realize they're related. Although Targaryens did marry each other anyway.
It's cool.
They loved it.
It's cool.
All right, I think we should take just a quick break and then come back to King's Landing.
Hey guys, Peter again. It's Sunday. Been out here in the woods for 3 days now. It's just so great. It's just beautiful, natural, and there's so many wonderful things to do and just wandering around in this beautiful, natural landscape with no cell phone service or cable that I'm really not thinking about tonight's episode at all. I just wanted you to know that. And in a weird way, I feel bad for you. I feel bad for you guys that you're going to be stuck inside watching this TV show when I am out here in this beautiful, rustic, very remote place where I can't watch TV. Because who wouldn't want to watch TV? Anyway, I want to let you know that I'm totally happy missing this week's episode and won't miss it all telling you you're wrong about it. So have fun.
Do you believe Peter, though?
He's starting to sound a little worried.
Yeah, there's a certain shrillness, extra shrillness to his voice. I
think there's a possibility that Peter is lost in the woods and is too proud to admit it.
If he has enough service to call us, hopefully his GPS is working. Hold the phone up in the air, Peter.
Stand on a little stump like the Lorax.
All right, we must head to town now.
All right, King's Landing. We have Cersei. Oh, good.
King's Landing.
That's it. That's the stuff.
That's a really good one.
The drums in that reminded me of the beginning in Aladdin of the Make Way for Prince Ali.
Oh, yeah. It's so beautiful.
Cersei is wearing her awesome Disney villain armor.
Yes.
Speaking of Disney movies, she is full on. Her eyebrows do not go anywhere but arch directly down now, which I really enjoy.
I think that this is an interesting strategy that's actually pretty politically savvy for her to take, which is to be real racist.
It does feel like maybe it's a little too on the nose, being like, they're foreigners. No one likes foreigners. That's my Mormont sounds a lot like Dobby, and my Cersei sounds a lot like a weird old man.
Or the Sorting Hat, actually.
Oh, all of my voices are strictly from Harry Potter.
Yeah, yeah.
Another Weasley.
That's my Sorting Hat.
Gryffindor.
So good. We can all agree that Cersei's probably a Hufflepuff, right?
What would Cersei be? Well,
she's
Slytherin.
Slytherin.
Clearly.
Sorry, I shouldn't have had to think about that for
no,
so long.
At all.
It's obvious.
And Jaime was supposed to be in Gryffindor, but told the Hat he had to be in Slytherin with his sister.
Yeah, yep. For sure.
To keep her safe, in quotes. But it works. That's the thing, is like, again, we sometimes watching the show forget that these are, in general, perhaps a small-minded and hateful group of people who it's very easy to be like, they're savages. And again, speaking of Disney movies, it's hard not to think of that Pocahontas song where they sing savages, savages, barely even human during this section of the show.
Yeah, this is a lot of Disney references
so much
that
Disney
are all pretty true, though. And also we get one of the worst dads. You thought maybe most of the really terrible dads in Game of Thrones were dead? Oh, no. We've still got Randall Tarly, who is an awful human.
Terrible. That said, we already know how poorly Randall Tarly has treated Samwell. Not well at all. But when Jaime approaches Randall and meets his son as well and first gets his name wrong by calling him Rickon, and then you find out that the son's name is Dickon. Like, Samwell's got it bad, but at least Samwell's name isn't Dickon Tarly. Pretty rough
also,
for that
kid. Also, Randall Tarly's such a terrible dad that his son was recast. That was not the person who played Sam's brother in the
You're not even
going
to say that name, are you?
You can say his name.
Dickon Tarly.
Dickon Tarly.
Actually, I'm pretty sure it's Richardson, guys.
Oh, you know Richardson? What? That is true.
Yeah, and he just made a terrible mistake in choosing his nickname.
But yeah, not only a bad dad, but also somebody who gave Jaime this big speech, like, you know, the Tarleys are not oath breakers. And essentially all Jaime did was say, really? And he was like, okay, we're oath breakers. Just kidding. We're with you guys.
Yep. And then we have Qyburn saying, we're working on a solution.
Ooh,
this is a bad
creepy
Qyburn.
I liked it.
I also always forget when I'm writing it in my phone, when I'm writing notes, that it's a Q.
Yeah, Q.
And then when I read recaps later, I realize it's a Q. And then I like to think of him as Q from James Bond.
Q-burn.
He's like, let's look at the gadget I've built to help you with your quest.
It's not inaccurate. I loved how sophisticated they thought that technology was.
I am furious. This is where the episode really started to lose me, because here is a man who has risen the dead.
Yep.
That is a thing that he has done.
True.
So when he said, we have a solution, or we're working on a solution, I was like, oh, I can't see
shit.
To see what he's come up with. And his solution was, just shoot him in the face.
I got a real big crossbow.
Years and
big
years,
crossbow.
People have been dealing with dragons, these unstoppable forces, forever. And you are telling me that none of these brilliant military minds of Westeros thought about shooting them? That's never come
up. Surface to air missiles.
What about just a really big gun? Oh, okay, that sounds great. What? Come on now. But it's really nice. So they go down to this, to what's essentially the Natural History Museum of King's Landing.
Yeah, yes. That is what it is.
And at some point in time, Cersei suggests that Robert Baratheon took some of his whores down here, which is perhaps the strangest place to have a tryst, but it does make me feel like maybe he's a big nerd and brought them down and was like, look at all the bones.
This is they the special have, collection.
They have 76 teeth, did you know? Oh, Robert. Keep talking dirty to me.
I just like that you still called it a tryst in this context.
That's right. No, he's a very innocent man.
It's romantic.
Man, Robert Baratheon. It is a nice image, though, to have Cersei pull the lever and have it shoot straight through this dragon's skull.
Oh, she looked so happy.
She did. She was thrilled. And it is nice to see her happy, because I have a feeling we're not going to be able to see her smile much over the next two seasons.
All right. Shall we head to the library?
Here we are, making our way back to the Citadel.
Did you already make a Shittadel joke?
Oh.
Has that already happened?
No.
I don't think
well
we
done,
have.
Sir.
Well, I'm going to go back into the past and write that into Peter's script.
We are so glad to have you here, Miles. All right, so Jorah is obviously not well.
No.
This is my least favorite storyline.
Really?
Yeah.
Here's the thing, is I will take any opportunity to watch Archmaester Slugworth work his magic. And it's also nice to be able to do an impression of somebody on the show and have it match up, because he is a Harry Potter character, mm-hmm. so I can get a one-to-one exchange.
But it's Slughorn, right?
Slughorn. Not
okay,
Slughorn. I'm sorry. I was thinking of
Slughorn
from Willy Wonka.
Oh, that's
remember
why.
When Sam had to steal the incredible gobstopper from the Archmaester's room?
And his invisibility cloak.
This is the new Dorne, I think.
It
does kind of feel that way, and that it all kind of drags. It's a story that could be told in kind of like one scene, which is Sam discovers something and he deals with it. And it's a lot of, I love Jim Broadbent. I think that he's great. It's nice to have another character who finds everything in the world exhausting.
For sure, for sure. No, I mean specifically Jorah and his grayscale. Like, I just don't give a shit about Jorah and his grayscale.
Sure.
Yeah, it
the
just,
letter
just,
he was writing to Khaleesi.
Yeah, it just doesn't matter, man.
I mean, I think the Citadel matters a ton.
For sure.
But it's too easy for Sam to read the books that have all the answers all at once, so he's got to have some other science experiments to do, I guess, in the meantime.
Right, right. That is true. And it is also, it was nice to have the moment where he and the Archmaester are walking through the library and he's collecting books for him, and the Archmaester is suggesting that he's going to write a book about these wars, and he's just looking for a title. And it made me feel like the very last episode of the show is going to be the two of them together, and Sam's going to say, what about Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
And the Archmaester is going to smile, and they're going to high-five, freeze frame, credits.
Yep.
That's it.
I mean, a lot of people think that actually what we are all experiencing is the version of this story that Samuel Tarly writes as a maester after it's all finished.
And it's
so I thought that was a wink to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was a wink to the idea that it's really, you know, Archmaester Marwyn will not survive probably long enough to finish writing it, but that Sam will write A Song of Ice and Fire. And that will be how this story sort of wraps up.
And that
freeze frame credits.
And that explains why this version of the story, Sam, a person who is not capable as a warrior, barely capable as like a student, is able to score just a super cute, super sweet person that he teaches to read. Oh, again,
ooh,
more illiteracy. It's getting me right where it hurts. I also, I find it fascinating. When they first started talking about the Citadel, I was so excited to go there because, again, clearly I just make love to books is apparently the thing that's my number one character trait. And that first scene that you get with this kind of swooping, you know, and you see all of the books in the library, and it's just one of the many libraries at the Citadel. And you feel Sam's joy. And then it turns out that it's not that nice of a place. And it is, in fact, the place where perhaps the two grossest scenes for me in Game of Thrones. And again, I rewatched it recently. And next to Viserys getting gold poured on his head, the two scenes that have taken place in the Citadel have destroyed food for me, perhaps forever. And it is like, so I can no longer eat soup because of last week's
or
episode.
Pot pie.
And
yeah,
now I can no longer eat pot
that
pie.
Pie transition
it's heartbreaking.
It was something. Somebody on Twitter called it like horrific and phenomenal, which I thought was just like such a perfect comment. Yeah, it was like, yes.
Also,
it was both of those things.
The cure for grayscale is just take the grayscale off
and then put the ointment on.
Yeah. That's it.
And maybe it works. It worked twice and it killed the guy who made it.
Worth noting, Archmaester Pyle wrote the cure, but he died of grayscale.
Yeah.
So
makes me a little bit nervous for Sam. Like, I have a feeling that Jorah might make it out, but maybe Sam won't.
Right, because it's
he's
super
wearing
contagious.
His big rubber gloves.
I think just with the gloves, he's good to go.
His face is completely exposed.
Did
his
he
giant
watch...
face, but he's got big rubber gloves on.
Did he watch the Bloodborne Pathogens video? When he signed on to be an intern at the Citadel, did he have to watch the Bloodborne Pathogens video?
I certainly hope so. And also,
a mask at least would have been good.
He can't get a bit of milk of the poppy. He's got to use rum instead.
Oh, yeah, milk of the poppy, man.
Come on. Come on.
All right, speaking of pie, which we were speaking about a minute ago.
In transit from one area to another.
That's a really good one.
I feel like Hot Pie deserves his own song.
Hot Pie!
Do Hot Pie.
Well, there we got that now.
Okay, perfect. It's in the bag.
It's in the bag for when we see Hot Pie again, which will be never.
I don't know, man. What I liked about Hot Pie is that he had hot tips, and then he told Arya that her bro John had taken over Winterfell.
It was really nice. What I didn't like about Hot Pie is that, once again, they were paying fan service to Macy. And he was replaced by, they replaced the original actor with Harry Styles, which seemed super out of character. Weird, right?
Maisie.
Hot pie.
It was strange for me to have Arya, in the previous episode where she met Ed Sheeran, she seemed to be old Arya a little bit. Like, she was able to immediately kind of feel comfortable with these people and talk and joke and be happy. She seemed shell-shocked in Hot Pie's kitchen. And that for me felt wrong. It felt like her character was taking a step backwards. Mm-hmm. But it also, I understand that the reason that they were doing it was to sell the moment where she found out that her family was still alive and had retaken Winterfell. And that moment was made me cry. It was very beautiful. And it was also nice to mix it in with her meeting old friends and kind of being able to show a little bit of that she's not just a murderous person anymore, that she still is capable of being a warm, kind of funny person who at the very end touches a friend's shoulder gently before riding off to the north.
Goodbye, Hot Pie.
Thanks, Hot Pie.
Don't die.
Well, I think, too, I mean, I know I was a little worried about that scene and what would happen when she found out that John had taken Winterfell. And would she just be like, whatever, I don't give a shit. I got my list. I got to go. You know, the fact that she was like, oh, I'm changing my plans now. I'm going to go north is very exciting.
And this was the first time that I think in a long time that the show has presented me with a character that has a choice where I'm not entirely sure what choice
they're
going to make.
This way on the road?
Mm-hmm.
That way on the road. That was the choice.
Yes.
It was very literal.
Literally someone said, this way to King's Landing, and walked away in their cart. And I was like, who's just making these pronouncements? And it was really refreshing to see her turn around. Speaking of spinoffs, I would love to see a great Westerosi bake-off that just is hosted by Hot Pie.
Oh my God.
Yes.
The whole show.
I would
Mary
watch
Berry and Hot Pie together, finally. But we don't stay. She starts to ride north, and then she has yet another reunion that maybe this one, I don't know how I feel about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a weird one. Did you do some interneting about what the deal was with that phrase that Arya, what was it? You're
well,
not.
Well, so the show creators actually explain it in the inside the episode.
Oh, good. When I was watching Ballers, you were watching inside the episode.
Weirdly enough, in that episode of Ballers, The Rock also explains it.
He was very concerned about infertility and Nymeria.
And so the idea is that it's a callback to something that she said to her father, Ned, in season one, where he says, you're going to be a lady in a dress and a castle and blah, blah, blah.
And she's like, mm-mm.
And she says, that's not me.
Yeah.
But I think that actually some people have wished it to be a more interesting, nuanced callback to things that happen in the books that don't happen in the show, which is that in the books, Bran isn't the only Stark who can warg into the minds of animals, specifically into the mind of their direwolf. Arya's been doing it for years in the books. And so the idea that some people had online was that it was actually Arya verbalizing what Nymeria was saying. It's not you.
Oh.
And so that would be Nymeria saying to Arya, you are no one. I don't know who you are. Which I think is actually much cooler. And so sometimes I feel like the internet should write the show, but then I realize that would be a disaster. And I cede to you the creators and your vision that involves less warging.
That actually is something before I saw the After Thrones with Benioff and Weiss. I was also kind of nervous that that was the case. That so Nymeria knew enough to know not to devour Arya alive,
right.
But also knew that she had changed enough that it was not the girl that the direwolf had connected to and grown up with. So Nymeria was willing to leave her behind, but was also someone who was going to leave her. And it also made me a little bit nervous that so Arya has set herself on this path to the north and then runs into a wolf. So who that the last time that she had seen this wolf, they were both so much younger and
yeah,
had
season
different
one.
Courses in life. And now she's seen this wolf with its own pack, living its own life, doing its own thing. And she's realized that she has to let the wolf go. So she says that it's not you. So I'm worried that Arya is also talking about herself and will then turn south again to go back on her mission.
No.
It's not you. You're not that girl anymore from Winterfell. It's time to turn back and kill the queen.
Oh, no.
No, man.
I know.
Someone on the Twitters thought maybe she was going to go kill Baelish, which would be pretty exciting.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah,
someone's got to.
Yeah. All right. We will head to the ocean in just a minute. We'll take a break.
Okay, look, it's Sunday night, and I've decided what I'm doing is I'm just going to try to train some chipmunks to act out scenes from Game of Thrones. It's not going well. So if you can, mail something, a summary, maybe just a blood stain, just something to get me by, man. You know, I just need something to take the edge off. All right, I'll talk to you soon. I think the chipmunks are about to have a fight. Bye.
Oh, Peter, buddy. I thought he was ready to be away from Game of Thrones on a Sunday night, but that doesn't sound like it's going well for him.
Yeah, I never thought he was ready. I knew he wouldn't be able to handle it. It's too much.
I am excited for next season when one of those chipmunk stars as a new character that we haven't seen yet.
I also am worried that he's going to come back with rabies because he's probably trying to put a tiny blonde wig on the Daenerys chipmunk.
God, Peter with rabies is just going to be insufferable. Okay, so now we're on boats.
Sailing along at sea.
Okay, before we get into the really horrible stuff that happens at sea.
You mean when Theon has to watch his sister make out with somebody?
That was actually the part I liked.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I just enjoyed the phrase foreign invasion when Oh, good, good.
So, you're going to be queen of the Iron Islands.
Once I kill my uncle.
And what will you be, handsome?
Whatever my queen commands.
You'll be my advisor. My protector.
Oh, I see.
Your protector. So if someone gets too close to you,
you might have to intervene
to hold that person back
until they've made their intentions known. Why are you standing all the way over there, then? A foreign invasion is underway. Leave him be.
Ayo.
A foreign invasion is underway. I groaned.
Rightly so.
At that writing. But also, okay, fine. A boy in every port, boy or girl, depends on the port.
It's like, we get it. Okay. It's also nice for the show to give us a brief scene with the sand snakes to remind us why we hate them.
They're the worst.
Turns out that's all it takes.
They're like the Kardashians with martial arts skills.
Oh, wow.
It is insane that the show can take a group of women who all have their own individual weapons that they're great at using. And the first scene that with the sand snakes, again, I had rewatched, is awesome. And I was like, I am ready for this. And in the books, they're great.
Mm-hmm.
But in that, their argument scene about is terrible. It's terrible. And it makes what comes next that much easier to deal with.
Euron is a crazy face pirate.
Yep. Euron is insane. That mustache.
It is so nice in the show to have a villain who is campy.
Yeah.
It feels like not had a Renaissance fair style villain in the show. Like, Joffrey is a straight up crazy person who's weird and sadistic, and there's no fun in him.
Right. Ramsay,
and Ramsay
similarly.
Is the same way.
Yeah.
But Euron takes joy in his evil,
uh-huh.
and that makes him fun to watch. That and the eyeliner. but when he comes crashing down on this dragon-mouthed thing that crushes a man, and he's just like, I'm going to do some killing. It's like, oh, yeah. And then he does what everybody who watches Game of Thrones has wanted to do for the past 3 years, which is eliminates most of Dorne.
Yep. He does.
He kills, if I'm not mistaken, I have it written down here, Whale Rider and Whipface. So
you look up the names?
Those are their two names. It's Keisha Castle Hughes, who played Whale Rider in the great movie Whale Rider.
Wow.
And then the girl with a whip. I like to think of them as Tony, the great 90s pop group. I'm not sure which Tony is which one, but
two of them are dead.
Two of them are dead now by their own weapons, which is even better.
And now we know what, I think we know, that Ilaria, who killed Cersei's youngest, who killed Cersei's daughter.
Yes.
Is the gift.
Is the gift. And also her daughter is the gift. So there's a surviving sand snake and there's Ilaria. So the two of them are... They're the gifts together, right?
I think so.
That's the deal?
Yeah.
They come as a package set.
Theon becomes Reek again and jumps into the water.
That was so frustrating.
Remember when I said that this was a great week for eunuchs?
Yeah,
I lied.
Yeah.
Two out of three eunuchs ain't bad.
You know what? Two out of three eunuchs agree.
It's a majority.
It outside of it being infuriating within the show, it drives me crazy outside of the show because I was done with Theon's story. He'd made a complete arc, and I'm done with him. I don't find him interesting as a character anymore.
No.
I don't find Reek interesting, to be honest. And I get that it's a little bit realistic to have a person who's gone through massive mental anguish not maybe be over it immediately when he meets his cool sister. But there's one place where his path can go, and that he redeems himself by killing Euron. That seems to be the journey that he will take. And that's not interesting to me. I don't care about him. I care about Yara. Yara seems like a cool character who has all of her shit together. Theon doesn't. And the moment when you knew that he was going to change back to Reek, I was like, no, come on.
Yeah. Well, it also just feels like... It feels like a cheap storyline trick, too, right? Because he already was that. We thought he'd, you know, moved past that as much as he could. And the fact that he's just going to jump in the water and cry.
And it makes him an unreliable character. And any time that he changes, you're just going to be ready for them to be like, he changed back.
Yeah,
surprise. He disappointed
super
you again.
Convenient and lame.
I think it's slightly more interesting than the two of you who are hating on it real hard.
Good.
Because I think that too many people have been through too much trauma in this show and we haven't seen it affect them. So I do think that's kind of interesting. But also, Theon was never brave. It wasn't like he went from brave to Reek to something else. He was always sort of a whiny servant of Ned Stark. And then he got captured. Like, he spent his whole life in some form of captivity, basically.
But
except for the hot
Sansa.
Minute when he tried to be in charge. Hot minute.
Right, but that to me was like, oh, he's
minutes.
Like he's doing it.
Right.
Like, he's ready to fight for
himself.
Well,
now he's
and
rose in the
loves,
ocean,
you know.
And I appreciate...
And Leo has sunk.
So sad. The heart of the ocean just going to the bottom.
Rose.
I do appreciate the idea that people have been through a lot and maybe you don't get to see them deal with the anguish afterwards. That said, in Theon's story, there were two seasons of that anguish. He was mentally broken. He was a broken creature. And the story, the uplift arc that you got with him was that he was able to pull himself out of it and come back. So you saw him not only deal with the downfall of being a broken person, but you got to see him put himself back together through his connections with his Stark family and through his connections with his Greyjoy family. And that was nice. It felt like he had made a complete arc. And I think it's disappointing to pull that out from under us.
Regression.
Yeah.
All right, now time for a voicemail that hopefully is not another voicemail from Peter, because he should try to enjoy nature.
It's going to be
there.
From the chipmunk.
And a reminder
come
that
pick
if you
this guy up.
A reminder that if you would like to call us and leave a voicemail with your thoughts on the episode, do that by calling 312-948-4687. We have a toll-free number, which I don't really know how that works, but we do.
I know it's
855-923-9993. Let's hear a voicemail.
Hey, this is Mark from Boston. I really enjoy your podcast. When you're talking about the gift that Euron Greyjoy is going to bring to Cersei, you don't mention that in the books, at the Kingsmoot, where Euron was chosen as the king, he had a horn that if you blow the horn, it kills the dragons. Nobody's mentioned that yet, and I think that would be an amazing gift for him to give to Cersei, because with that, she could kill Daenerys' dragons.
That was Mark Wahlberg, which is nice of him
Mark
to call
Wahlberg
him from Boston. This is a thing that I initially thought, too, in the last episode when he said that he was going to bring back a gift to somebody who had read the books. That was my assumption.
The horn!
Finally, the horn's going to be here. At long last, the horn. And then Qyburn mentioned in this episode that they were working on a way to defeat the dragons.
Is it the horn?
Is it going to be the horn? No, it's a huge-ass crossbow. I'm wondering if it's going to be a thing that's cut completely. That's the way it's seeming like. Yeah.
That's so lame. I guess, I don't know. The dragons seem too easy. The horn is even easier, maybe, or something?
You think that a horn that you blow to kill a dragon might also be too much of an ass?
It controls the dragons.
It controls the
dragons. So it just changes who the allegiance of the dragons belongs to, because there's like a dog whistle, but it's like a dragon horn dog whistle situation.
Is it a French horn?
Uh-huh. It's a French horn.
He plays a beautiful song.
Is it a trombone? The dragon bone horn?
That is the one thing that Euron is missing. The one thing that would make him sexier is like a trombone. Like if he came down on that thing and was like...
Oh, no.
Oh, when Theon jumped in the water. Womp, womp.
Again, call us if you have thoughts, predictions, musings. 312-948-4687. You can also tweet at us. We're at NerdAtPodcast. Or at Peter Sagal. I'm sure he would like to hear how much fun you had listening to this show without him. That would make him feel really good. You should probably tweet at him. If you prefer Miles, let him know.
Oh, yeah, I think
don't.
We would
it
all
will
like
kill
to
Peter.
Know.
And he's going to make me carry his codpiece even more now as his squire.
Ooh. Thanks to I Never Write Reviews 1-8375-72910 for forcing
social security
your name
number?
And writing us a nice review.
I've already
on
stolen
Apple
their
podcast.
Identity.
Oh man. This show is produced by us with help from Justin Bull. Thanks to our special guest, Miles the Squire.
Thank you guys so much. It was a real joy.
Peter's back next week, but Miles, I have a feeling we'll be seeing more of you in the future.
Oh, shucks. Don't make me blush.
Our executive producer is Joel Meyer.
And our theme music was composed by Andrew Edwards of Blue Police Box Music.
There's one squirrel who looks a little bit like Daenerys, if you squint, and so I'm trying to get her to sort of, like... you know, attack things, and there's a really tiny squirrel. I'm calling it Tyrion. It may be a mouse. I don't know. Anyway, it's not going well.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.